temporal SCPs. The SCP Foundation, at this point, meddles with the fundamental laws of reality with such regularity that it's likely at least one researcher breaks a law of physics on their way to the break room every day. Time is certainly no exception to this, and there are quite a lot of temporal SCPs out there, ones that either muddle with, bend, or break time completely. I've already covered some articles that specifically focus on time loops, whereas these cover time in a broader sense, which does, of course, cover a lot of ground. With that out of the way, let's take a look. Let's start with SCP-6871, a thaumaturgic ritual that's capable of removing persons, objects, and/or phenomena from the baseline timeline. When executed properly, the target's impact and actions within the timeline will be retroactively erased and replaced. Obviously, this isn't going to end well. We're given a brief testing log of the ritual, starting with a D-class, conducting it to remove a dollar bill from existence. No differences were noted, so they tried again on a dollar bill previously used by Dr. Brenda to purchase coffee. This resulted in Dr. Brenda being visibly more tired throughout the day, leading to smaller progress on her current project than before. They then decided to bring in a different D-class to erase the first one, reverting the changes they had made. After that, they tried bringing in a third D-class, erasing the second one, and bringing reality back to where it was before, with Dr. Brenda still tired. In the fifth test, for some reason, they decided to erase Dr. Brenda from the timeline, which seems a bit cruel. This resulted in research on the numerous anomalies she was involved in being visibly more advanced, because Dr. Williams, who she had fought for her position with, took over in this timeline and achieved a much higher clearance level. Okay, so in a twisted way, I guess that did help out the Foundation a bit. But then they decide to erase Dr. Williams as well, resulting in that position going unclaimed and removing the discovery of 7 previously known SCP objects. Normally, this might be where they leave things better off alone, but they then decide to erase Dr. Elias Shaw, the current holder of SCP-963, an amulet that allows Shaw's consciousness to overwrite anyone wearing it. The ritual managed to remove the current host of Shaw, but the amulet and Shaw's consciousness remained unharmed. They stepped it up then by removing all 126 hosts, but 126 other individuals were found to be hosts afterwards. Insistent on getting rid of this thing, they then performed the ritual on SCP-963 itself, which removes Shaw's consciousness alongside all research progress he had achieved. This must not have been too acceptable, as they immediately deleted the D-class responsible for doing so, restoring the timeline again. Surprisingly, the administrator of the Foundation then stepped in to perform the ritual on SCP-6871 itself, presumably to prevent any more temporal shenanigans, but he was actually overruled by Delta T, a trans-temporal Foundation agency, to avoid a temporal paradox. With the ritual still intact then, O-5-12 came in to try to remove a long-standing thorn in the Foundation's side, SCP-682. Despite the ritual's proper execution and the object's initial removal alongside the damage it caused, 682 reappeared in its cell seconds later, calling the attempt pathetic. Undeterred, O-5-12 then used the ritual to remove the entire race of the Children of the Night, SCP-1000. This resulted in humanity being the dominant species ever since its inception, and human society being advanced beyond recognition. Numerous deific entities and outstandingly advanced technology have been integrated into society. The rest of the council wasn't happy with this, as O-5-12 had done those tests on his own, so they used a D-class to remove him, restoring the timeline. It seems they still recognized the ritual's potential to remove problems, however, and decided to use it to erase MTF-Alpha-1, Red Right Hand, in order to remove the Chaos Insurgency. They did so, along with 2% of the Foundation's scientific personnel and 1.5% of other MTF units, who were apparently spies working for the insurgency. The Council then went even a bit madder, deciding to remove the head of the Global Occult Coalition, which resulted in the GOC being erased from the timeline. As a result, the Foundation became the main anomalous organization in the world, currently rivaling a worldwide rebellion led by the Grand Karsist Ayun alongside the Clavigar. Not content with that arrangement, they proceed to use the ritual to remove Ayun, but this resulted in human society regressing back to the Bronze Age. A majority of human progress, alongside the Church of the Broken God and all O5 Council members, disappear from reality. Records indicate that humanity was unable to progress further than said age for more than 3,000 years. Oops. We're then told that this document was found in the Deep Well archives of the ruins of a building marked as Exclusionary Site 01 in Oregon during a coalition raid following civilian reports of unidentified ruins found within the woods. Research indicates that the building is at least 2,000 years old and belongs to a worldwide organization specializing in the containment of anomalous phenomena called the SCP Foundation. No organization by that name or evidence supporting its existence exists. Well, sure seems like the Foundation screwed the pooch on that one. Next, we have SCP-1032, a silver alarm clock bearing 26 hands of various sizes and shapes. The movements of these hands do not measure the passage of time, but rather measure the time until the end of an ongoing event or the destruction of an extant entity. White text on the front of each hand, in sizes ranging from barely legible to microscopic, describe the event to be measured by that hand. When one of the hands reaches the 12 o'clock position, several events occur simultaneously, the combination of which is referred to as a midnight event. First, the event or entity currently written on the hand ends or is destroyed. Second, the text on the hand spontaneously changes to describe a new event or entity. And third, the hand's rotational velocity changes. To date, the clock has never been wrong, as every event appearing on its hands has ended precisely at the moment of the corresponding midnight event. It has accurately predicted the deaths of a redacted 5-digit number of individual organisms, the fall of a number of governments, the dissolution of dozens of major agencies and institutions, the death of a language, and the beginning of a redacted event. Since any given hand's speed remains constant at all times except during midnight events, the time to the end of any entity measured by one of the hands can be predicted precisely. We're given a list of all of the hands and their current designations, starting with the smallest hand and going to the largest. The first hand rotates too fast to have a constant measurement, and has only ever been recorded as having the words a thought, a sound, or a sensation. The second hand moves too slowly to measure, and just has the words the worst thing that will ever happen to anybody written on it. The third hand had the words my safe classification written on it, with a predicted end time of June 2nd, 2012. A researcher suggested that since the clock is showing signs of self-awareness, it should be promoted to a Euclid class threat. The proposal was scheduled for review on June 2nd, 2012, at which point it was changed to Euclid class. The text then changed to read, "My Euclid classification," with a predicted date of January 9th, 2015. Since the clock has yet to manifest any properties warranting a Keter classification, another researcher suggested that it be demoted to safe. He notes that blindly following this prediction isn't very productive, but if they don't, it might start doing things that force them to make it Keter. The fourth hand has the universe written on it, with the predicted date being expunged from the record. The fifth has a failed infomercial on it, and this hand moves very quickly, cycling 2 to 5 times per day. To date, it has never displayed any other inscription. Sixth has Freedom of the Press on it, with a predicted date of May 16th, 2073, although it doesn't specify the country or countries whose freedom of the press will end. Seventh has Humor ending in 2052, and Eighth has the use of the phrase, "You can say that again," ending in 2267. The Ninth has hostilities between the nations of Africa ending on an expunged date, although it's noted that due to the clock predicting violent or disturbing events using apparently harmless phrases, this could mean either peace in Africa or the destruction of the continent. The Tenth Hand always describes individual human beings, currently being Jason W. Taylor Jr.'s sister's daughter, and these people are usually difficult or impossible to identify and locate. In 2011, however, it predicted the death of a D-class that was assigned to SCP-1032, so he was sealed in an airtight steel chamber with two guards, all three equipped with self-contained breathing apparatus. Despite this, he expired exactly at the predicted time, with his death being determined to be caused by his oxygen tank being mistakenly filled with pressurized VX nerve gas used to control another SCP. The 11th Hand predicts the end of a president's term in office, although most of this has been redacted. The 12th always describes a non-corporate restaurant, currently a burger joint. In 1993, in an attempt to keep a hot dog place from closing as predicted, the Foundation donated an anonymous $10,000 to it to remain open, but the owner renovated the place and renamed it. The 13th Hand has the number 2020 on it, with a predicted date of January 1st, 2022, and the researchers were attempting to discern whether or not this would constitute the clock's first failure. I think we can safely file that one away. The 14th Hand isn't listed, but the 15th has the words "effective containment" on it, ending in 2690, apparently the same date that SCP-094, a miniature event horizon, will fully engulf the Earth. The 16th Hand has Project Serapis ending in 2016, with the notes expunged, and the 17th has SCP-343, God, listed on it, although the date and the notes have been redacted. The 18th and 19th Hands have been expunged completely, while the 20th has been mostly redacted, with just the notes mentioning a popular Mexican soap opera. The 21st Hand has the SCP Foundation written on it, although of course the date and notes have been expunged. The 22nd Hand has Concern for Public Health ending in 2032, while the 23rd has Anomalous Pathogenic Outbreak written on it, with the date partially redacted. Due to failure on containment typically occurring, it's projected that this is referring to SCP-016, a sentient bloodborne pathogen. The 24th Hand has space-time destabilization occurring at some point, while the 25th just says, "Let there be chaos." The date has been expunged, although security measures have been increased in wake of this after some suspicious activity was detected on site involving a group of chaos insurgents disguised as facility guards. Lastly, the 26th Hand has the Jabberwocky event listed on it, and it's noted that the research staff are all looking forward to this. Unfortunately, that was the event related to SCP-1762 that resulted in the end of the dragons inside of it. Next, we have SCP-3200, a region of space currently 300 million light-years in diameter, the center of which is 700 million light-years from Earth, commonly referred to as the Boötes Void. At present, the exact properties of this region are unknown, as most research into the anomaly was conducted by the now-defunct Peregrine Expedition Program. As such, there is considerable debate into how exactly it functions, though the following principles are considered to be accurate. It represents an exceptionally thin and potentially open region of space-time such that trans-universal contact is possible through it. It is expanding at a rate of 1 million light years per year, and this expansion poses a non-zero threat of a UK-class universal collapse scenario. All other points concerning its exact properties are considered to be highly speculative. The anomaly was first discovered by civilian scientists who noted that the region of space possessed significantly fewer galaxies than one would expect from any other region of space, as a region of that size should hold around 2,000 galaxies, while this one only holds 60. Foundation researchers conducting research into extrasolar anomalies noted extremely high Hume levels arising from 3200, which measures the level of reality in an area. Continued research into the anomaly wouldn't be seriously conducted, however, until the launch of the Peregrine expeditions in 2008. The original Peregrine expedition mission statement notes that with the creation of ever-sophisticated technology by members of their applied sciences divisions, they often find uses for various advances that they had never before considered. The creation of the first temporal sinks showed them that time can be manipulated, slowed down, or even held constant from the perspectives of different viewers. As such, they aim to use modified temporal sink devices in the launch of a new Foundation space initiative in order to better understand non-terrestrial anomalies. By speeding up time relative to us on Earth for the crew members, they can accomplish advanced space travel to many distant locations. Temporal sinks allow them to maintain the natural flow of time for both the observers on Earth and the crew members, maintaining causality in all frames of reference. It's a simple matter of cryogenically freezing the crew members for however long they intend to travel, activating their modified temporal sinks, and then waking them up when they arrive. Small-scale tests indicate that they could use these temporal sinks aboard fuel-efficient ion thruster-powered spacecraft to send researchers hundreds of millions of light years away and back in the space of a few months, allowing them to vastly improve their knowledge of extrasolar anomalies. With that highly optimistic message, SCP-3200 was selected as the target of the Peregrine 9 expedition, launched November 29, 2010. A mechanical engineer, astrophysicist, and extrasolar containment specialist were sent, with the mission planning to take 6 years, four of which the team would be spending cryogenically frozen. In February of 2016, 9 months before it was scheduled to end, the Foundation recovered a capsule launched by Peregrine 9, consisting of modified segments of the original shuttle. We're given some of the relevant logs and transcripts found inside. The first is a video log taken shortly after they woke up, in which they note that they don't feel anything different despite being inside of the anomaly. When they look out the viewport, however, they see that it's pitch black, with no signs of any stars or galaxies visible. Later, the mechanical engineer slash captain sits in front of the camera and reports that they've already hit a snag on day one. The first thing they tried to do was verify the anomalous Hume levels, but their counters don't seem to be functioning properly here. The Hume levels are fluctuating rapidly, anywhere from almost zero to absurd numbers in the hundreds. It would be quite the tragedy if they came all the way here with faulty counters. He then looks out the viewport and says that there does seem to be something off about this place, but they'll have to do more research. Another video from around 6 weeks later shows the three crew members sitting around a box of some kind. The captain reports that they woke up today and saw this box outside, floating around in the middle of space nowhere. They proceed to open the box, wherein they find a CD, which they put into one of their computers. A video file opens up on the computer, showing the captain sitting in front of the camera. He states his name and says that it's day 35 of the Peregrine 9 mission. There's still no signs of slowing down the anomaly's growth, and they can't get any good data on it either because they still can't get any of their counters working. They'll see what they can do, though, and he signs off. A week later, the captain records another video on day 47 of the mission and says that they've picked up about 12 more recordings of him speaking about the anomaly. They're still not getting any closer to answers, though, as all of these other versions of him seem to know more than he does, since they all reference stopping SCP-3200. Also, the Cant counters still don't work. The astrophysicist thinks that they're seeing something from other universes, which would explain where those things are coming from. The specialist, however, believes that something is off about the reality surrounding this anomaly, which would explain the malfunctioning Cant counters, but they have no idea why that is either. There's another video from 5 months later, and the captain reports that they've found 38 tapes of him so far. None of them are exactly the same, with each video having him in different clothes, with different dates, different hair, all kinds of things. What worries him the most is that they still haven't found out any details about what exactly SCP-3200 is doing. They're pretty sure that this is a region of some weird space-time stuff, as the astrophysicist is adamant that this is a region where space-time is pretty thin, allowing for contact between universes. They've also started finding more than just capsules, as they found bodies. His own body, the other crew members, and even people that he's never seen before. There's also parts of shuttles using technology that he's never seen before, and other scraps of things that he doesn't understand at all. He shudders, and says that there's something deeply wrong about this place, and it feels fundamentally misplaced, like it doesn't belong. In his personal notes a few weeks later, the captain wrote, "How many times? How many times have we been here?" This is the question that keeps me up at night, the question that has brought me no rest. We are certainly not the first, and every other Kuznetsov out there seems to have been brought low by this same question. We recovered a log today. The man that I saw on that tape was old. Very old. He had been recording the anomaly for a long time. Years, perhaps even decades. Thousands of tapes recovered. No answers. He had studied it for years and years, and nowhere did he find an answer to why this was happening. They say that the definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results. If so, then just how mad are we? A couple of weeks later, the captain apparently vanished while attempting to retrieve another tape, reappearing 2 days later, extremely dehydrated and weak. The other crew members report that he recorded one more message before lapsing into a coma. It reads, "We were fools. The void isn't a region where space-time is ruined. It's the source of the tear itself. Space-time itself is rending itself apart, and we're seeing echoes of every timeline in the past and future. Time is an Ouroboros, devouring itself again and again, only to be reborn. I saw all of it, all of the times we tried to stop it in the past, all the times that I tried to stop it in the past. And the future. This happens again and again until we get it right. Over and over again, we try and try to fix it. All times blend together until we reach singularity and all is lost. The tear opens more holes everywhere in reality, and the anomalies appear faster and faster, but containment is only delaying the inevitable cleansing of the slate. I saw all the timelines, and we haven't stopped it in any of them. Mater Boija, we have seen into the abyss, and by God, it hates us." That was the last recorded event in the capsule recovered by the Foundation, and given the passing of the original end date of the mission, the expedition is considered to be lost. So, you have a massive region of empty space that apparently bleeds into other universes, connecting them all, and it's also expanding to eventually wipe out all existence. The Foundation, in countless universes, has sent a mission to figure out how to stop it, and has never come close. It's suggested that the time sink mechanisms they used to make the mission possible could have been what created the anomaly in the first place, as time is an Ouroboros. Yet another reality-ending threat potentially caused by those boneheads at the Foundation.
On WhatsApp, no one can see or hear your personal messages. Whether it's a voice call, message, or sending a password. To WhatsApp, it's all just this. So whether you're sharing the streaming password in the family chat or trading those late-night voice messages that could basically become a podcast, your personal messages stay between you, your friends, and your family. No one else. Not even us. WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone.
Moving on, we have SCP-1968, a bronze torus of unknown composition around 10 feet across and marked with raised features or glyphs believed to act as control surfaces. It's difficult to photograph or visually inspect the object as it appears to bend light, and mild fluctuating gravitational effects have also been observed. It has also proved impossible to take a sample of it, and although it's not particularly heavy, studies suggest that neutronium may be present inside of it in vanishingly small quantities, a theoretical substance composed purely of neutrons that would be one of the densest states of matter possible. 1968 demonstrates its anomalous properties when it is handled by a human being, and when moderate force is applied to it, it will begin to deform in unpredictable ways. Its material composition will appear to change, and it will become animated, surrounding the individual in convolutions and undulating increasingly faster. Its primary effect will manifest itself when an unpredictable threshold is met, after which it will return to its original state. At this point, the individual will have had their memories altered, and they will no longer agree with the historical record. Their self-reported history will be at odds with Foundation personnel records, and as a consequence, they will often assume a posture of agitation and paranoia. The more pronounced the deformation of the artifact, the more divergent their memories will be. The object was recovered in late 2001 from a core sample extracted during a petrochemical survey in Greenland. Based on the depth from which it was recovered, along with corroborating paleo-atmospheric readings, it's estimated to be around 31 million years old. Foundation personnel intercepted the radio transmission of its discovery, and owing to its unusual nature and age, moved to secure the artifact. Class B amnestics were administered to the personnel in Greenland, along with those individuals at the governing authority in Denmark, who had been made aware of its discovery. Once on site, it was discovered that one of the engineers had been placed in a psychiatric hold after violently assaulting a colleague. It's presumed that they had handled the artifact. We're then handed a bunch of warnings about the following material and how we've been administered a lethal mimetic agent that has to be counteracted once security has confirmed our identity. We're informed that the previous description is a cover story based on what were their initial conclusions, and the anomaly's actual effects have proven to be very different. The first experiment with it had been pretty uneventful, with routine medical examinations on their test subject revealing no untoward effects. When they returned to their quarters, however, it appeared to them that their furniture had been altered, although no evidence could be found to support their claim. Subsequently, they seemed confused about their shifts of duty, when they were scheduled, and to whom they were to report. After the second experiment, they appeared alarmed and confused, as the laboratory seemed changed to them, and they professed that personnel appeared to be missing, while others were completely unfamiliar. Interrogation of the subject showed that they were in possession of drastically different memories, encompassing such areas as diverse as their personal history, the nature of Foundation assets, and the historical record. During an interview, they admitted to never hearing of a fellow researcher and friend before now, despite the other researcher knowing intimate details of their life. They also mentioned several SCPs that they've worked on, but the Foundation has never heard of any of them. At first, it was assumed that the artifact had in some unknown way affected their mind, but interrogation showed that their memories were extraordinarily detailed and self-consistent. Furthermore, they demonstrated knowledge of classified material to which they could not possibly have been exposed to. The operating assumption at the time was that the subject had been compromised by forces unknown. At the conclusion of the third trial, the subject's account of the previous experiments themselves were in stark contradiction with the record. Among other things, they claimed that it had been the 19th such experiment, and was able to offer a form of proof in the form of a testable experimental prediction. In an effort to corroborate their account of the changes occurring, measurements were performed inside the artifact's sphere of influence, with negative results. Efforts were suspended when, unexpectedly, back-channel reports surfaced of the discovery of just such phenomena at CERN in Switzerland at the time the anomaly had been in operation. Experiments were repeated away from the anomaly's immediate vicinity and succeeded in detecting the effect. Further experiments were performed as distantly as New Zealand, South Africa, and the Antarctic, reproducing the same findings. Even a probe in the space around Jupiter concluded the same. The vicinity within the anomaly's area of operation appeared insulated from the effect, however, perhaps by design. Based on the chronology of these experiments, it seems that the effect propagates nearly instantaneously at a rate comparable to the cosmological inflation which occurred shortly after the Big Bang. One interpretation of what's happening is that the entire universe is being affected by the anomaly, altering the universe's past while leaving the memories of the person operating the anomaly intact. In light of this possibility, all testing was suspended indefinitely, and the consent of all O5 members is required to perform further experiments. After testing was discontinued, the initial subject evaded Foundation supervision and attempted to take their own life, resulting in them becoming catatonic. 2 months later, the anomaly engaged itself without human intervention, and a person which superficially resembled the original subject emerged. They were badly wounded, having suffered unidentified chemical burns over 60% of their body, and they died shortly after without being able to be interviewed. It remains unknown how the artifact managed to activate itself. Another month later, the anomaly once again activated itself, this time disgorging a non-human entity heavily armed. It was ultimately neutralized after killing a dozen personnel and wounding many more, with a weapon behaving in a manner inconsistent with current understanding of physical law, and which resembled SCP-1968. The goal or purpose of the entity has not been established. The suggestion has been made that in the event of an imminent CK-class reality-ending scenario, the anomaly could be used in a last-ditch effort to avert catastrophe, but at the cost of irrevocably and unpredictably altering the past. Such a decision could not be made lightly, as to do so would ensure that the world as we know it would cease to exist. It's also been pointed out that if the artifact had already been used in this manner, they would have no evidence of it, and the incursions that took place might have been attempts to use the anomaly to accomplish exactly that. So, it's just a simple artifact that rewrites the timeline of the entire universe, except for one person who has to live with the memories of the previous, overwritten timeline. It's certainly among the most powerful and potentially damaging anomalies the Foundation has ever touched, and who knows how many lives were lost throughout all of their experiments with it. Let's end with SCP-2700. A complex mechanical device that's believed to be a sophisticated directed energy weapon developed by Nikola Tesla. It was discovered in 1946 and recovered from a defunct but heavily secured research facility utilized by Tesla during 1934. The anomaly consists of three components: the interface, the accelerator, and the core. The interface is a steel control console with a QWERTY keyboard, a display screen, and a number of buttons, switches, and levers. It's connected to the other parts by a network of copper wiring, and the screen features a command-based operating system, with commands and responses appearing in green block text. The nature of the interface's operating system is still under investigation. The accelerator is believed to be a linear particle accelerator held in a lead-lined tungsten cylindrical chamber. The device contains all the components that would be required for a contemporary particle accelerator, though it is significantly smaller than a device of this design would require. Lastly, the core is a lead-lined tungsten assembly containing an apparatus of currently unclear function. It consists of a spherical frame constructed of an unidentified substance, suspended within a transparent sphere, the composition of which also remains unidentified. According to Tesla's notes, the space within this sphere is held in a perpetual vacuum state, and present within the frame is a continuous current of plasma, generated and perpetuated by unknown means. Available information suggests that particles produced in the core would then be introduced into the accelerator and accelerated as expected for such a device. Energetic particles would then be propelled from the terminus of the accelerator towards the intended target. How the device is powered and the exact nature of the particles produced by the core remained unclear. We're given a notice informing us that the next section is only for personnel of clearance level 4 or higher, and informed that, much like the last article, the above description has been falsified. SCP-2700 is a device originally constructed by Nikola Tesla with the purpose of producing a directed energy weapon. Investigation of the anomaly while in Foundation custody, however, has proven that it possesses a function distinct from and significantly more dangerous than its original designs. The interface and the accelerator are as they were described earlier, but the core isn't. The luminescent anomaly located in its center is not plasma, but rather a discrete energy phenomena now designated SCP-2700 Omega. Omega behaves inversely with regards to entropy, meaning that while the universe always moves towards higher entropy and more disorder, Omega does the opposite, entirely breaking the second law of thermodynamics. Due to this, the effective flow of time within this region is also reversed. Presently, the unidentified materials surrounding Omega are immune to its effects, and this appears to be the only factor preventing a breach of the phenomenon. If it were to escape the interior of the core, an inexorable chain reaction would occur, converting the rest of the universe to this inverted entropic state. The eventuality of this scenario would be a YK-class entropic annihilation event, resulting in the reduction of the entire universe to an infinitely energetic singularity, or basically, an inverted Big Bang. As indicated by the interface, the device is currently armed and set to activate in 2234, exactly 300 years after its initial arming. As this would inherently trigger a breach of Omega, current containment protocols must be completed prior to the set date to avert a YK-class event. We're then left with an excerpt from Tesla's personal log, which reads, "It stands before me, complete and inescapably counting down toward the nexus of my oversights and failures. Only 1 month ago, I was approached by a man I had never seen before. He was the most content person I had ever seen. His eyes felt like a window into serenity. He said he was looking for the most curious mind in the world, and I was it. Apparently, I wasn't hard to distinguish from the billions of other minds on the planet. Not that that surprises me. Somehow I knew immediately that he wasn't from here, and I felt self-conscious about this world, my world. It felt humiliating to me. I think he knew what I was feeling. During those brief windows when I was not isolated in my work, I would glimpse the events unfolding elsewhere. I never cared for what I saw. The world is too broken to feed itself, and it's responding like any hungry animal. It's angry. War is coming. I can only hope that in the conflict, nature will take its course, and the lingering degenerates of our species are expunged. It's because of the degenerates that war erupts, and war is the only thing that can clean them from civilization. That is the way of any system. When the unnecessary pieces build up to critical mass, chaos brings the destruction that returns things to equilibrium. But his smile just seemed to cut right through the maelstrom of disgust and inadequacy in my head. Then came the truth. He was looking for the most ingenious minds from each of the other universes. He found my lack of astonishment to the phrase, other universes, surprising. I asked how many there were, and he said he did not know. In addition to his own and mine, they had only found 5 others that were coherent and could support life. If anything, I was astonished that there were only 7 found. He laughed at that, said I seemed promising to him. I asked him what he wanted me for. To unlock science's final secret. We prepared for departure over the next 24 hours. I asked the traveler if I could take my project with me and have his people look at it, to which he replied that it would be no problem. The Teleforce had hit substantial roadblocks. I had no way to develop a power source sufficient for it. I didn't tell him what it was. I just said it was just an accelerator, not a weapon. I didn't want him second-guessing my motivations. I thought that if I could complete it in his universe, I could bring it back and take care of the equilibrium problem myself. We left in the early morning. I admit, while the prospect of another universe didn't shock me considerably, the premise of actually traveling there was intriguing. The traveler grabbed my arm and adjusted something attached to his wrist. It resembled a simple watch, but I couldn't get a good look at it. There was an intense flash, and everything went black. For an instant, I thought I'd been blinded. Then I felt the terrifying free fall, tumbling through infinite darkness at unfathomable speed. I'd never been more frightened in all my life. Even so, I experienced wonder and anticipation such that I had never known. Then, in an instant, it all stopped. I opened my eyes and saw. Words failed to do it justice. More accurately, our words failed to do it justice. Just as I cannot write the traveler's true name in these letters and be satisfied with it, I cannot describe the transcendent beauty of his homeworld. It was a world with a pulse, a life that I could palpate. And at that point, I felt the enormity of my world's hollow and primitive nature collapse upon me. I cried, not at his world's beauty, but at my world's sheer inferiority. I'm relieved that he never realized the real reason behind those tears. I was brought to a city. Again, I'm using the word city as nothing more than the most appropriate analog. There, the traveler introduced me to his family and to many of his people. That feeling of contentment that he gave me during our first encounter now surrounded me on all sides. My sense of shame only deepened. This world wasn't just better, it was the closest thing to perfection that I could possibly imagine. They weren't pointlessly cheery, but they would not tolerate any of the idiotic and trivial nonsense that people fret over here. Then I met the others, one from each universe, as the traveler explained to me, him being the representative of his own universe. I will not go into details on their appearances. This is irrelevant and ephemeral information that reveals nothing of their vast intellect and ingenuity. I spent at least a day simply talking with them. I kept my pocket watch with me during my visit, It was the only thing that kept record of Earth's time while I was there. They have their own form of time, of course, but it was more practical for me to keep using ours. I vastly enjoyed the time I spent conversing with them. We spoke of things I would never dare reference as science here, but they thought of it as no more strange than gravity itself. The traveler told everyone what the great project he had assembled us for was. We were to build a perpetual energy generator. Not only did this instill in me appropriately infinite fascination, but I identified that this was just what the Teleforce needed. Naturally, I volunteered my device to them to be the test subject for the generator once it was finished, just to see if it worked. To my delight, they accepted this proposal and we got to work. Over the course of a few short weeks, we compiled our data, and at last it was I that found the solution. The properties of two specific substances, each from a different universe, when in interaction should produce the reaction that would catalyze infinite energy. Both samples had been taken from universes that were inhospitable to our form of life. Their subatomic nature was not only at odds with the realm in which I was residing, but with each other. It was only by virtue of a causal membrane the others provided me with that the samples could remain in existence here. I was certain that this paradoxical interaction was the key. I pored over the notes for nights, trying to finalize the designs. It was at that time that one of the others came to me, offering his help. The Watcher is what I like to call him. That is what he did. He watched me all the time. I don't know why, and he claimed I was just interesting. Certainly disconcerting, but I can admit to having the same feeling myself often. He peered over my notes and pointed out something I had missed, a simple error I had overlooked. With that, my calculations were complete, and we were ready to begin the test. I was ecstatic. The day came, and the traveler and I loaded the core into the Teleforce for our initial test. At first, everything was going as we had foreseen, but when we inspected it 1 hour later, one of the others noticed something unusual. The amount of energy inside the core seemed to be diminishing, which didn't make any sense at all. Then the horrific realization came. It wasn't diminishing. The energy was converging upon itself infinitely. The core was reversing the flow of entropy. None of the others failed to see the critical danger of this predicament. If we could not neutralize the reaction, it could disrupt the flow of entropy for the entire universe. It would reverse time to the birth of existence. Hastily, I accessed the console of the Teleforce and saw that someone had set it to activate in 300 years. I tried to disable it, but I could not. The system would not recognize my commands, which can only mean that someone sabotaged the console. Then it clicked in my head with absolute certainty. I spun to face the Watcher and declared him the culprit of the situation. He gave a smile that seemed to contain more malice than any one being should be capable of. He denied nothing and went further. He explained that only he knew how to deactivate the Teleforce, and that disassembling it would do nothing but spread the reaction sooner. He leered at me in that way he always had, and I cursed myself for not figuring him out sooner. Some greatest mind I was. Then he said it. What right did I have to hold him with contempt when I too came here to complete a weapon? Clearly those wretched eyes had found my journal, for he then began to describe the Teleforce's function and purpose. He commended me for coming to another universe to build it, rather than risk building it in my own, as it was exactly what he did. Why did he set it to 300 years? It was merely a safeguard to ensure it didn't activate while he was still there. The Watcher then disappeared back to his own universe, taking the only device capable of reaching it with him. We were left there with my great invention, now a time bomb for this universe that I had grown so fond of. Why did the Watcher want to create such a weapon in the first place?
I don't know or care anymore. All I cared about was the fear and hopelessness of the Traveler, his family, and his world. It was my theories that brought this upon them. It was all my fault. The Traveler, though, did not blame me, and I think that was the final sign that I had to do what I did. I took the Teleforce back here. I took the death of existence back to my universe where it belonged. I have betrayed all life forms in this cosmos. I have betrayed our entire future. I am not sorry, and I am not apologizing. I could not let my legacy be the destruction of a universe I was not even worthy of. It seems I will in the end bring the equilibrium I desired, and it will be the end of our degenerate universe. The Teleforce is locked away safely. I spend my long hours before the pond with the birds. They are so blissfully unaware of what approaches, and that gives me just enough tranquility to tolerate my own existence. A reversal of energy, of entropy, of time. If reversing time was a simpler task, perhaps I could have stopped this from ever happening and save our universe. No, I wouldn't have. I would have made our universe one worth saving. So, to sum all that up then, Tesla was taken by a Traveler from another universe to a utopia, along with a bunch of other scientists, to make a perpetual energy machine. Tesla ends up figuring out how to do it, and finishes his machine with it, but it turns out that the core, made of two substances from other universes, is now experiencing reverse entropy. What's more, he can't deactivate it, because one of the other scientists wanted him to do all this in order to destroy this universe, for reasons left unknown. Rather than leaving the machine there to destroy the nice universe, he brings it back to destroy our crappy one instead. Time and time again, we've seen that nothing good comes from people getting involved with the fundamental concepts of reality. But there's just something so alluring about playing God that keeps people coming back to it. There aren't many people that haven't thought about having the ability to go back or forward in time, or relive a moment, or change something, but thankfully that ability continues to elude humanity. Time might not really be on our side, but it's far better to just let it do its thing rather than poke it with a stick.